It's extremely difficult for most of them to grasp the idea that God could have multiple personalities. It can appear as more than one person. Of course, the Christians have their idea of the Trinity. But that's a very... Thank you. That's a very perverted idea. Bhaktivinoda Thakura rejects it as unreasonable, the Christian idea of the Trinity, that God would appear as a human being and suffer, as supposedly Jesus Christ did. God doesn't suffer. He never experiences any unhappiness. But by his choice, and for his own pleasure, and to share his pleasure, he expands. And he uses his shaktis, or energies, to expand. Shakti means you let someone else do the work. Just like now you can, if you have $4 million, you can buy a robot from the Sony company, or whatever company's making them. A robot that will do your housework for you, and serve your lunch, and scratch your back. Yeah, if you have $4 million, you can buy one. They're available. This is shakti, someone else to do the work for you. So Krishna has many shaktis. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. Nastatsamas cha vyadikap cha drishyate. Parasya shaktir vividaiva shriyate. Svabhaviki gana bala kriya cha. Thing about God, he's not like us. He's not under obligation to work. Name partasti kartavyam. I have nothing I have to do, especially in this world, this material world. I have no obligations. I have no ambitions. I have no duties to fulfill. So natasya karyam. He doesn't have anything to do. Karanam. And since he doesn't have to do anything, he doesn't have to possess any instruments for doing anything. Doesn't have to have a car to drive to work in, because he doesn't have to go to work. So no duties and no instruments for doing those duties. But he has his pleasure. And for those pleasure he has his special instruments, his shaktis, his energies. We think of the energies as female, but that's one aspect. The Thladini Shakti is the female counterpart of the Lord. Very important. Krishna's pleasure is coming through with the help of his Thladini Shakti. First thing is Krishna should be happy. What's the use of anything else if Krishna's not happy? So first comes the Thladini Shakti, first importance, to serve Krishna's, the satisfaction of Krishna's pleasure. But for that, there should be some place to have the pleasure, some things to use for personal pleasure reciprocations, a place, and things in that place. And what's the use of a happy situation if you can't experience it? You know, after you're dead, they could stuff nice food in your mouth, but you can't enjoy it. You're dead. They can put nice clothes on you for your funeral, you know, your favorite clothes, and a nice rose in your lapel, but you can't enjoy it because you're dead. So if there's no consciousness, then you can't enjoy. Actually, enjoyment is a special kind of consciousness. So there are these three requirements that are supplied by the three different main energies of the Lord. His pleasure potency, but his pleasure potency has to be supported by the Sandini and Samvit Shaktis. So, today is the appearance day of Krishna's elder brother, Lord Balaram, Baladev. Svabhaviki Gana Bala Kriya Cha. Gana Bala Kriya. Three divisions of the Supreme Lord's energy. Power, activity, and knowledge. The Today we're honoring the appearance day of Lord Bala, the Sundanish Shakti of the Supreme Lord. This is Krishna's choice, that he just enjoys, and someone else makes the arrangements for him. All arrangements are made by Lord Balaram. The spiritual world is created by him. The living entities who are voluntary participants or sometimes non-participants in Krishna's Leela, they're made emanating from Lord Balaram. All the paraphernalia of Krishna's service is personally provided by Lord Balaram. Personal services. Balaram becomes Anantashesha, the bed on which Mahavishnu lies. In the spiritual world, he's serving as Krishna's umbrella and his shoes and his bed and everything else. And most importantly, he's appearing in his transcendental form, Balaram, as Krishna's brother, his friend, his closest friend and companion, most constant friend and companion. Krishna hardly ever goes anywhere, hardly ever enjoys any leela without Balaram being right there by his side, enjoying with him. It's Krishna's choice that he has a friend, a brother. In our life, someone has a multiple personality, that's abnormal. It's a psychosis that a person has split personality, more than one identity, different names, different consciousness, different even appearances. That's psychotic. That's insane. It's a clinical mental illness when a person has multiple personalities. Or more normally, young children. A child who doesn't have any brothers or sisters in his imagination will create a brother for himself. My little brother, even though he doesn't exist, he's always fantasizing about my little brother and how I'm playing with him. That's fantasy of a child. And in an adult, it's insanity. But in God, that's the normal condition. He has multiple personalities. God can have it without being abnormal. So first companion of Krishna is Balaram. His girlfriends he'll meet when he grows up. But from childhood, his first companion is Balaram, from his infancy. Krishna, when he got old enough to go out in the forest, first tending the calves and then a year or two later tending the cows, Balaram went with him every single day, except for in very unusual occasions, either Krishna or Balaram's birthday, when they would be kept at home. Otherwise, they went out every day together. They were together for killing demons, together for almost everything. When Krishna got a little older and started becoming interested in the girls, then Balaram could not directly participate in Krishna's pastimes with his girlfriends. Then there was sometimes a brief separation or non-participation of Balaram in Krishna's Madhurya Leela. But Balaram has his own girlfriends, his own Rasa Leela, that is affirmed by Vrindavan Das Thakur in his Chaitanya Bhagavat. And it's also described in Srimad Bhagavatam. So traditionally we read from Krishna book about Lord Balaram. There are several chapters that glorify him. And I want to read now this one chapter, chapter 65 of the Krishna book, Lord Balaram Visits Vrindavan. Prabhupada says, Lord Balaram became very anxious to see his father and mother in Vrindavan. Therefore, with great enthusiasm, he started on a chariot for Vrindavan. The inhabitants of Vrindavan had been anxious to see Krishna and Balaram for a very long time. When Lord Balaram returned to Vrindavan, all the cowherd boys and the gopis had grown up. But still, on his arrival, they all embraced him, and Balaram embraced them in reciprocation. After this, he came before Maharaj Nanda and Yashoda and offered his respectful obeisances. In response, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaja offered their blessings unto him. They addressed him as Jagad Ishwara, or the Lord of the universe, who maintains everyone. The reason for this was that Krishna and Balaram maintain all living entities. And yet Nanda and Yashoda were put into such difficulties on account of their absence. Feeling like this, they embraced Balaram and, seating him on their laps, began their perpetual crying, wetting Balaram with their tears. Lord Balaram then offered his respectful obeisances to the elderly cowherd men and accepted the obeisances of the younger cowherd men. Thus, according to their different ages and relationships, Lord Balaram exchanged feelings of friendship with them. He shook hands with those who were his equals in age and friendship, and with loud laughing embraced each one of them. Just as Krishna has different kinds of relationships with many different devotees. This is not an abnormal thing, even in material life. A person has different relationships. He has his wife, he has his children, he has his mother and his father, his friends, his employer, his employees. That's normal in anyone. But Krishna has relationships with everybody in infinite varieties. Lord Balaram is no way inferior to him. So Lord Balaram also has all these different kinds of relationships. He's first of all showing respect to his elders. Then he's meeting his friends, or he's accepting the obeisances of those who are younger than him. And then he's meeting with his equal friends, equal in age, and very intimate in friendship with him. Okay, and then continuing, Prabhupada says, after being received by the cowherd men and boys, the gopis, and King Nanda and Yashoda, Lord Balaram sat down, feeling satisfied, and they all surrounded him. This is perfection. It's not that you'll die and go to heaven and never even see God face to face. You'll sit, you know, on the yard there in the garden of heaven and play a harp and sing some songs, and that's your spiritual life. No, it's much more personal than that. God will be your friend in some relationship, and you'll be sitting around with all the other friends, having your personal reciprocation, darshan of the Supreme Lord, and your intimate relationships with him. Okay, so they all surrounded him, but it's not that they just all sat there and looked at each other. They talk, and they dance, and they play, and engage in different kinds of personal exchanges, as follows. Prabhupada says, first Lord Balaram inquired from them about their welfare. And then, since they had not seen him for such a long time, they began to ask him different questions. The inhabitants of Vrindavan had sacrificed everything for Krishna, simply being captivated by the lotus eyes of the Lord. because of their great desire to love Krishna. They had never desired anything like elevation to the heavenly planets, or merging into the effulgence of Brahman to become one with the absolute truth. They were not even interested in enjoying a life of opulence, but were satisfied in living a simple life in the village as cowherds. They were always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and did not desire any personal benefits. And they were all so much in love with him that in his absence, their voices faltered when they began to inquire from Balaramaji. First, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mayi inquired, "My dear Balaram, are our friends like Vasudev and others in the family doing well? Now you and Krishna are grown up, married men with children. In the happiness of family life, do you sometimes remember your poor father and mother?" Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Devi, "It is very good news that the most sinful King Kamsa has been killed by you, and that our friends like Vasudev and the others who had been harassed have now been relieved. It is also very good news that you and Krishna defeated Jarasandha and Kalayavana, who is now dead, and that you are now living in a fortified residence in Dwarka." When the gopis arrived, Lord Balaram glanced over them with loving eyes. Being overjoyed, the gopis, who had so long been mortified on account of Krishna's and Balaram's absence, began to ask about the welfare of the two brothers. They specifically asked Balaram whether Krishna was enjoying his life surrounded by the enlightened women of Dwarka Puri. "Does he sometimes remember his father Nanda and his mother Yashoda and the other friends with whom he so intimately behaved while in Vrindavan? Does Krishna have any plans to come here to see his mother Yashoda? And does he remember us gopis, who are now pitifully bereft of his company? Krishna may have forgotten us in the midst of the cultured women of Dwarka, but as far as we are concerned, we still remember him by collecting flowers and sewing them into garlands. When he does not come, however, we simply pass our time in crying. If only he would come here and accept these garlands we have made. Dear Lord Balaram, descendant of Dasharhara, you know that we would give up everything for Krishna's friendship. Even in great distress, one cannot give up the connection of family members. But although it might be impossible for others, we gave up our fathers, mothers, sisters, and relatives. But then Krishna, without caring a pinch for our renunciation, all of a sudden renounced us and went away. He broke off our intimate relationship without serious consideration and left for a foreign country. But he was so clever and cunning that he manufactured very nice words. He said, 'My dear gopis, please do not worry. The service you have rendered me is impossible for me to repay. After all, we are women, and so how could we disbelieve him? Now we can understand that his sweet words were simply for cheating us.'" Protesting, it's not that Balaram is some rival god. You know, that they're competing for devotees, Krishna and Balaram. When one worships Lord Balaram, what's the effect? When one very fortunate person gets the association of Lord Balaram, as the gopis have here, what's the result? The result is increased Krishna consciousness. Balaram is not trying to distract their attention from Krishna. What about me? Rather, they're talking about Krishna, and they're only thinking about Krishna. Krishna, Balaram, and the gopis. Continuing, protesting Krishna's absence from Vrindavan, another gopi said, "My dear Balaramaji, we are, of course, village girls, so Krishna could cheat us in that way. But what about the women of Dwaraka? We village women might be misled by Krishna, but the women in the city of Dwaraka are very clever and intelligent. Therefore, I would be surprised if such city women could be misled by Krishna and could believe his words." Then another gopi began to speak. "My dear friend," she said, "Krishna is very clever in using words. No one can compete with him in that art. He can manufacture such colorful words and talk so sweetly that the heart of any woman would be misled. Besides that, he has perfected the art of smiling very attractively, and by seeing his smile, women become mad after him and give themselves to him without hesitation." Another gopi, after hearing this, said, "My dear friends, what is the use of talking about Krishna? If you are at all interested in passing time by talking, let us talk on some other subject than him. If cruel Krishna can pass his time without us, why can't we pass our time without Krishna? Of course, Krishna is passing his days without us very happily, but we cannot pass our days happily without him." When the gopis were talking in this way, their feelings for Krishna became more and more intense, and they were experiencing Krishna's smiling, Krishna's words of love, Krishna's attractive features, Krishna's characteristics, and Krishna's embraces. By the force of their ecstatic feelings, it appeared to them that Krishna was personally present and dancing before them. Because of their sweet remembrance of Krishna, they could not check their tears, and they began to cry without consideration. Lord Balaram, of course, could understand the ecstatic feeling of the gopis, and therefore he wanted to pacify them. He was expert in presenting an appeal, and thus treating the gopis very respectfully, he began to narrate the stories of Krishna so tactfully that the gopis became satisfied. To keep the gopis in Vrindavan satisfied, Lord Balaram stayed there continuously for 2 months, namely the months of Chaitra, March-April, and Vaishakha, April-May. For those 2 months, he kept himself among the gopis, and he passed every night with them in the forest of Vrindavan to satisfy their desire for conjugal love. Thus, Balaram also enjoyed the rasa dance with the gopis during these 2 months. Since the season was springtime, the breeze on the bank of the Jamuna was blowing very mildly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, especially the flower known as Komudi. Moonlight filled the sky and spread everywhere, and thus the banks of the Jamuna appeared very bright and pleasing. And Lord Balaram enjoyed the company of the gopis there. The demigod known as Varuna sent his daughter Varuni in the form of liquid honey oozing from the hollows of the trees. Because of this honey, the whole forest became aromatic, and the sweet aroma of the liquid honey, Varuni, captivated Balaramaji. Balaramaji and all the gopis became very much attracted by the taste of the Varuni, and all of them drank it together. While drinking this natural beverage, all the gopis chanted the glories of Lord Balaram, and Lord Balaram felt very happy, as if he had become intoxicated by drinking that Varuni beverage. As if God doesn't become intoxicated. He doesn't. His consciousness is never distorted or covered by inebriation or by suffering. But he's pretending to be intoxicated. He's experiencing an ecstasy that's an imitation of intoxication. His eyes rolled in a pleasing attitude. He was decorated with long garlands of forest flowers, and the whole situation appeared to be a great function of happiness because of this transcendental bliss. Lord Balaram smiled beautifully, and the drops of perspiration decorating his face appeared like soothing morning dew. While Balaram was in that happy mood, he desired to enjoy the company of the gopis in the water of the Jamuna. Therefore, he called the Jamuna to come nearby. But the Jamuna neglected the order of Balaramaji, considering him intoxicated. Lord Balaram became very much displeased at the Jamuna's neglecting his order. He immediately wanted to scratch the land near the river with his plowshare. Lord Balaram has two weapons, a plow and a club, from which he takes service when they are required. This time he wanted to bring the Jamuna by force, and he took the help of his plow. He wanted to punish the Jamuna because she did not come in obedience to his order. He addressed the Jamuna, "You wretched river! You did not care for my order! Now I shall teach you a lesson. You did not come to me voluntarily. Now, with the help of my plow, I shall force you to come. I shall divide you into hundreds of scattered streams." When the Jamuna was threatened like this, she became greatly afraid of the power of Balaram and immediately came in person, falling at his lotus feet and praying thus, "My dear Balaram, you are the most powerful personality, and you are pleasing to everyone. Unfortunately, I forgot your glorious, exalted position. But now I have come to my senses, and I remember that you hold all the planetary systems on your head, merely by your partial expansion, Shesha. You are the sustainer of the whole universe. My dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are full with six opulences. Because I forgot your omnipotence, I have mistakenly disobeyed your order, and thus I have become a great offender. But, my dear Lord, please know that I am a soul surrendered unto you, who are very affectionate to your devotees. Therefore, please excuse my impudence and mistakes, and by your causeless mercy, may you now release me." Upon displaying this submissive attitude, the Jamuna was forgiven. And when she came nearby, Lord Balaram enjoyed the pleasure of swimming in her waters along with the gopis, in the same way that an elephant enjoys himself along with his many she-elephants. After a long time, when Lord Balaram had enjoyed to his full satisfaction, he came out of the water, and immediately a goddess of fortune offered him a nice blue garment and a valuable necklace made of gold. After bathing in the Jamuna, Lord Balaram, dressed in blue garments and decorated with golden ornaments, look very attractive to everyone. Lord Balaram's complexion is white, and when he was properly dressed, he looked exactly like the white elephant of King Indra in the heavenly planets. The river Jamuna still has many small branches due to being scratched by the plowshare of Lord Balarama. And all these branches of the river Jamuna still glorify the omnipotence of Lord Balarama. Lord Balarama and the gopis enjoyed transcendental pastimes every night for 2 months. And the time passed so quickly that all those nights appeared to be only one night. In the presence of Lord Balaram, all the gopis and the other inhabitants of Vrindavan became as cheerful as they had been before in the presence of both brothers, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 55th chapter of Krishna, Lord Balaram Visits Vrindavan. Lord Balaram is showing his strength, his power to command, and his ability to do anything he wants to do. He is the source of all power. He has the power, he uses his power to create and destroy universes. He expands as the Chaturvyuha in Vaikuntha, and they further expand as the Purusha, the creator. So Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu are expansions of expansions of expansions of Lord Balaram. Through them, Lord Balaram exerts his power to create universes. He expanded the spiritual world, and now he also creates the material worlds. And his expansion in the material world, Lord Ananta Shesha, at the time that it is the universe must be destroyed by his power, he and Lord Shiva, deputized by him, will destroy the universe. So Balaram has the power to destroy and create universes. But even more significant than that is the spiritual power emanating from Lord Balaram. Devotional service is described as a combination of the Hladini and Samvit energies. But this Sundani energy is also involved. Nahi balahine na labhyaha. Without the power coming from Lord Balaram, nobody can achieve spiritual success. Nobody can achieve the favor of the Lord without making some endeavor. And spiritual endeavor is not possible without the power empowerment of Lord Balaram. All spiritual power is coming from him. We receive spiritual power through the disciplic succession of spiritual masters. And we each have our own individual spiritual master who is the last link in the chain who gives us this power. But the origin on the other end of the chain is Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram is the original spiritual master of all spiritual masters. So we are not self-realized souls. We don't know our Sarupa. We don't know what relationship we may have with Lord Balaram in our eternal spiritual identity. But we do have, as practicing devotees, as sadhakas, we have our relationship with Lord Balaram as the supreme original spiritual master. How do we serve? How do we establish our connection with Lord Balaram? By our connection with our own spiritual master. By serving the mission of the spiritual master, which is the mission of Lord Balaram, by dedicating one's life to the service, to serving the mission of the spiritual master, one gets the strength, the blessings of Lord Balaram. And with that strength, one can succeed in fulfilling his spiritual ambitions. Whatever you want, liberation, love of God, or you just want some power, or just some relief from your distress, whatever you want, you require the strength given by Lord Balaram to pursue your spiritual ambitions. It is gained by serving the spiritual masters who are representatives of Lord Balaram and satisfying them. And spiritual master is satisfied not by flattery, not by comforts and sense gratification. He's satisfied by making a sincere endeavor to carry out the mission of the Lord. Making a serious commitment, dedication, to giving your life, your whole life, to serving the spiritual master's mission. That is actually pleasing to the representative of Lord Balaram. And then you gain the strength. We see practically those devotees who have become very prominent and very potent in ISKCON, who become great spiritual masters with many followers, they accomplish this not on their own strength, but by virtue of becoming completely dedicated to Prabhupada's mission. This is the clue, the secret to becoming empowered, to dedicate yourself. If we just go on pursuing our selfish ambitions, our selfish purposes, which may be, restoring my health, overcoming my mental and physical problems, establishing power over others, even preaching or studying. But if it's just selfishly motivated, then it's not real dedication to the mission of the spiritual masters. Dedication to the mission means being ready to do anything and to undergo any trouble for as long as it takes to accomplish satisfying, fulfilling the mission of the spiritual master and satisfying him. How many lifetimes it may take, one must be dedicated to giving everything without reservation, without selfish concerns. Then one is actually properly linked up. This is required. This is what Prabhupada expected. He didn't expect the Westerners and Indians that he picked up off out of the gutter to be in any superficial way perfect. He didn't expect them to be perfect gentlemen or perfect scholars or perfect anything or even very civilized. He didn't expect it. He knew he was smart and he knew what he was working with, the material he was working with. He knew how imperfect it was. But what he always expected from his disciples was dedication. That now you're giving your life to ISKCON. ISKCON has given, Prabhupada has given you your spiritual life. Now you, in return, you give your life back to him. That dedication Prabhupada expected. And he was shocked when it wasn't there. And therefore, it was just normal to think we were only imagining it, but we were thinking in the early years that we're giving everything, our lives to Prabhupada. Prabhupada is not here anymore. And there's a tendency to forget that ISKCON is not here to serve you. You're here to serve ISKCON. That our purpose is to dedicate our existence. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm supposed to be glorifying Lord Balaram. But I'm trying to give an idea how to actually serve and satisfy him. One other pastime I wanted to read was Marriage of Aniruddha. Let me find it.
68.
Chapter 68? Got it. That's the marriage of Sambhav. I guess it's... Is that the one I'm thinking of? No. Well, I guess the one where Dantavraka got his teeth knocked out. Kalinga, King Kalinga got his teeth knocked out. And
that's
marriage of Sambhav? No.
Okay,
it has a problem. Is the chapter has a different title. What? Sorry? That's the name of it? Yeah, let me find it. Yeah, maybe you can locate it. I'll read something else in the meanwhile. 219. Okay, after... Yes, Prabhu. if I can't find it in the table of contents here, hopefully it won't help too much. I mean, you find it. You can look in the computer too.
61.
Okay, 61. Okay. What's entitled there? All right, I'll look there. But I'm going to read this first. Once upon a time, Lord Balaram heard that an arrangement was being made for a fight between the two rival parties of the Kuru dynasty, one headed by Duryodhan and the other by the Pandavas. He did not like the idea that he was to be only a mediator to stop the fighting. Finding it unbearable not to take an active part on behalf of either of the parties, he left Dwarka on the plea of visiting various holy places of pilgrimage. He first of all visited the place of pilgrimage known as Prabhasa Kshetra. He took his bath there, and he pacified the local brahmanas and offered oblations to the demigods, pittas, great sages, and people in general, in accordance with Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. That is the Vedic method of visiting holy places. After this, accompanied by some respectable brahmanas, he decided to visit different places on the bank of the river Saraswati. He gradually visited such places as Prituduka, Bindusara, Tritakupa, Sudarshana Tirtha, Vishala Tirtha, Brahma Tirtha, and Chakra Tirtha. Besides these, he also visited all the holy places on the bank of the Saraswati River, running toward the east. After this, he visited all the principal holy places on the bank of the Jamuna and on the bank of the Ganges. Thus he gradually came to the holy place known as Naimisharanya. This holy place, Naimisharanya, is still existing in India. And in ancient times it was especially used for the meetings of great sages and saintly persons with the aim of understanding spiritual life and self-realization. When Lord Balaram visited that place, there was a great sacrifice being performed by a great assembly of transcendentalists. Such meetings were planned to last thousands of years. When Lord Balaram arrived, all the participants in the meeting, great sages, ascetics, brahmanas, and learned scholars, immediately arose from their seats and welcomed him with great honor and respect. Some offered him respects by standing up and then paying obeisances. And those who were elderly, great sages and brahmanas, offered him blessings after standing up. After this formality, Lord Balaram was offered a suitable seat, and everyone present worshipped him. Everyone in the assembly stood up in the presence of Balaram, because they knew him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Education or learning means to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although Lord Balaram appeared on the earth as a Kshatriya, all the Brahmins and sages stood up because they knew who Lord Balaram was. Unfortunately, after being worshipped and seated in his place, Lord Balaram saw Romaharshana, the disciple of Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of Godhead, still sitting on the Vyasasana. He had neither gotten up from his seat nor offered him respects. Because he was seated on the Vyasasana, he foolishly thought himself greater than the Lord. Therefore, he did not get down from his seat or bow down before the Lord. Lord Balaram then considered the history of Romaharshana. He was born in a Suta family, or a mixed family, born of a Brahmin woman and a Kshatriya man. Therefore, although Romaharshana considered Balaram a Kshatriya, he should not have remained sitting on a higher seat. According to his position by birth, He should not even have accepted the higher sitting position, because many learned brahmanas and sages were present. Lord Balaram also observed that Rama Harshan not only refused to come down from his exalted seat, but did not even stand up and offer his respects when Balaramaji entered the assembly. Lord Balaram did not like the audacity of Rama Harshana, and becoming very angry at him, declared from his seat, "This man, Rama Harshana, is so impudent that he has accepted a higher seat than that of the respected Brahmins present here, although he was born in a degraded Pratiloma family. When a person is seated on the Vyasasana, he does not generally have to stand to receive a particular person entering the assembly. But in this case, the situation was different because Lord Balaram is not an ordinary human being. Therefore, although Rama Harshana Sutta was voted to the Vyasasana by all the brahmanas, he should have followed this behavior, the behavior of other learned sages and brahmanas present, and should have known that Lord Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Respects are always due him, even though such respects can be avoided in the case of ordinary men. The appearance of Krishna and Balaram is especially meant for reestablishing of the religious principles. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the highest religious principle is to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms that the topmost perfection of religion is to be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. When Lord Balaram saw that Rama Harshana Sutta did not understand the highest principles of religion, in spite of his having studied all the Vedas, he certainly could not support his position. Rama Harshana Sutta had been given the chance to become a perfect brahmana, but because of his ill behavior in his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his low birth was immediately remembered. Rama Harshana Sutta had been given the position of a brahmana, but he had not been born in the family of a brahmana. He had been born in a Pratiloma family. According to the Vedic concept, there are two kinds of mixed family heritage called Anuloma and Pratiloma. When a male is united with a female of a lower caste, the offspring is called Anuloma. But when a man unites with a woman of a higher caste, the offspring is called Pratiloma. Rama Harshana Sutta belonged to a Pratiloma family because his father was a Kshatriya and his mother was a Brahmana. Because Rama Harshana's transcendental position was not perfect, Lord Balaram remembered his Pratiloma heritage. If Rama Harshana had acted appropriately in spiritual consciousness, Balaram would not have remembered his Rama Harshana's material identity. He would have overlooked it. The idea, Prabhupada says, is that any man may be given the chance to become a brahmana, but if he improperly uses the position of a brahmana without actual realization, then his elevation to the brahminical position is not valid. After seeing the deficiency of realization in Rama Harshana Sutta, Lord Balaram decided to chastise him for being puffed up. Lord Balaram therefore said, "This man is liable to be awarded the death punishment, because although he has the good qualification of being a disciple of Lord Vyasadeva, and although he has studied all the Vedic literature from this exalted personality, he was not submissive in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, a person who is actually a Brahmin and is very learned must automatically become very gentle also. But although Rama Harshana Sutta was very learned and had been given the chance to become a Brahmin, he had not become gentle. From this we understand that one who is puffed up by material acquisitions cannot acquire the gentle behavior befitting a Brahmana. The learning of such a person is as good as a valuable jewel decorating the hood of a serpent. Despite the valuable jewel on stage. Lord Balaram considered, I have appeared in order to chastise false persons who are internally impure, but externally oppose themselves to be very learned and religious. My killing of such persons is proper to check them from further sinful activity. Lord Balaram had avoided taking part in the Battle of Kurukshetra, and yet because of his position as an incarnation, the reestablishment of religious principles was his prime duty. Considering these points, he killed Romoharshana Sutta simply by striking him with a kusha straw, which was nothing but a blade of grass. If someone questions how Lord Balaram could kill Romoharshana Sutta simply by striking him with a blade of kusha grass, the answer is given in Srimad Bhagavatam by the use of the word Prabhu, Master. The Lord's position is always transcendental, and because he is omnipotent, he can act as he likes, without being obliged to follow the material laws and principles. Thus it is possible for him to kill Romoharshana Sutta simply by striking him with the blade of kusha grass. At the death of Romoharshana Sutta, everyone present became very much aggrieved and cried out, Alas, alas! Although all the brahmanas and sages present knew Lord Balaram to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they did not hesitate to protest the Lord's action. They humbly submitted, Our dear Lord, we think that your action is not in line with the religious principles. Dear Lord Yadunandana, we may inform you that we Brahmins posted Romoharshana Sutta on that exalted position for the duration of this great sacrifice. He was seated on the Vyasasana by our election. And when one is seated on the Vyasasana, it is improper for him to stand up to receive a person. Moreover, we awarded Romoharshana Sutta an undisturbed duration of life. Under the circumstances, since your lordship has killed him, without knowing all these facts, we think that your action is equal to killing a Brahmin. Dear Lord, deliverer of all the fallen souls, we know for certain that you are the knower of all Vedic principles. You are the master of all mystic powers. Therefore, the Vedic injunctions cannot ordinarily be applied to your personality. But we respectfully advise you to show your causeless mercy upon others by kindly atoning for this killing of Romoharshana Sutta. We do not, however, suggest what kind of act you should perform to atone for killing him. We simply suggest that you adopt some method of atonement so that others may follow your action. Whatever is done by a great personality is followed by the ordinary man. The Lord replied, Yes, I must atone for this action, which may have been proper for me, but is improper for others. Therefore, I think that it is my duty to execute a suitable act of atonement enjoined in the authorized scriptures. Simultaneously, I can also give this Romoharshana Sutta life again with a span of long duration, sufficient strength and full power of the senses. Not only that, but if you desire, I shall be glad to award him anything else you may ask. I shall be very glad to grant all these boons to fulfill your desires. This statement by Lord Balaram definitely confirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is free to act in any way. Although his killing of Romoharshana Sutta may be considered improper, he could immediately counteract it with greater profit to all. Therefore, one should not imitate the actions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should simply follow the instructions of the Lord. All the great learned sages present realized that although they considered the action of Lord Balaram improper, the Lord was immediately able to compensate with greater profits. Not wanting to detract from the mission of the Lord in killing Romoharshana Sutta, all of them prayed,
Our dear Lord, the uncommon use of your Kusha weapon to kill Romaharshana Suta may remain as it is. Because you desired to kill him, he should not be brought back to life again. At the same time, your lordship may remember that we sages and Brahmins voluntarily gave him long life. Therefore, such a benediction should not be nullified. Now what is he supposed to do? So, thus the request of all the learned Brahmins in the assembly was ambiguous, because they wanted to keep intact their benediction that Romaharshana Suta would continue to live until the end of the great sacrifice. But at the same time, they did not want to nullify Balaram's killing him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead therefore solved the problem in a manner befitting his exalted position. He said, because the Son is produced from the body of the Father, the Vedas enjoin that the Son is the Father's representative. Therefore I say that Ugrasravasuta, the son of Romaharshana Suta, should henceforth take his father's position and continue the discourses on the Puranas. And because you wanted Romaharshana to have a long duration of life, this benediction will be transferred to his son. The son, Ugrasrava, will therefore have all the facilities you offered, a long duration of life and a good and healthy body, and with no disturbances and full strength of all the senses. Lord Balaram then implored all the sages and brahmanas that aside from the benediction offered to the son of Romaharshana, they should ask him from him any other benediction, and he would be prepared to fulfill it immediately. The Lord thus placed himself in the position of an ordinary kshatriya and informed the sages that he did not know in what way he could atone for his killing of Romaharshana, but whatever they would suggest, he would be glad to accept. The Brahmanas could understand the purpose of the Lord, and thus they suggested that he atone in a manner beneficial to them. They said, our dear Lord, there is a very powerful demon of the name Balvala. He is the son of Ilvala, and he visits this sacred place of sacrifice every fortnight on the full moon and moonless days, and creates a great disturbance to the discharge of our duties in the sacrifice. O descendant of the Dasharhar family, we all request you to kill this demon. We think that if you kindly kill him, that will be your atonement on our behalf. The demon occasionally comes here and profusely throws upon us contaminated impure things like pus, blood, stool, urine, and wine. He pollutes this sacred place by showering such filth upon us. After killing Balvala, you may continue touring all the sacred places of pilgrimage for 12 months. And in that way, you will be completely freed from all contamination. That is our prescription. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 78th chapter of Krishna, the killing of Dantavakra, Vidurata, and Romaharshana. Okay, so we are fasting until noon, and I suggest that we continue having kirtans and readings and talks through the morning, anybody who's willing to participate in that. Damodar Prabhu, could you read the next chapter? The next chapter is also about killing Balvala and Balaram finishing his tour of the holy places. And we can also read that chapter about that involves the killing of Rukmi. And there's a few stories in the Vrindavan Leela, but I don't have the book here. Okay. I'll leave this here, but I need to get it back later. Maybe we have some kirtan for now, you know, for a little while, then continue with reading. Lord Balaram considered, I have appeared in order to chastise false persons who are internally impure, but externally pose themselves to be very learned and religious. My killing of such persons is proper to check them from further sinful activity. Lord Balaram had avoided taking part in the battle of Kurukshetra, and yet because of his position as an incarnation, the reestablishment of religious principles was his prime duty. Considering these points, he killed Romaharshanasutta simply by striking him with a kusha straw, which was nothing but a blade of grass. If someone questions how Lord Balaram could kill Romaharshanasutta simply by striking him with a blade of kusha grass, the answer is given in Srimad Bhagavatam by the use of the word Prabhu, Master. The Lord's position is always transcendental, and because he is omnipotent, he can act as he likes, without being obliged to follow the material laws and principles. Thus it is possible for him to kill Romaharshanasutta simply by striking him with the blade of kusha grass. At the death of Romaharshanasutta, everyone present became very much aggrieved and cried out, "Alas, alas!" Although all the brahmanas and sages present knew Lord Balaram to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they did not hesitate to protest the Lord's action. They humbly submitted, "Our dear Lord, we think that your action is not in line with the religious principles. Dear Lord Yadunandana, we may inform you that we Brahmins posted Romaharshanasutta on that exalted position for the duration of this great sacrifice. He was seated on the Vyasasana by our election. And when one is seated on the Vyasasana, it is improper for him to stand up to receive a person. Moreover, we awarded Romaharshanasutta an undisturbed duration of life. Under the circumstances, since your lordship has killed him, without knowing all these facts, we think that your action is equal to killing a Brahmin. Dear Lord, deliverer of all the fallen souls, we know for certain that you are the knower of all Vedic principles. You are the master of all mystic powers. Therefore, the Vedic injunctions cannot ordinarily be applied to your personality. But we respectfully advise you to show your causeless mercy upon others by kindly atoning for this killing of Romaharshanasutta. We do not, however, suggest what kind of act you should perform to atone for killing him. We simply suggest that you adopt some method of atonement so that others may follow your action. Whatever is done by a great personality is followed by the ordinary man." The Lord replied, "Yes, I must atone for this action, which may have been proper for me, but is improper for others. Therefore, I think that it is my duty to execute a suitable act of atonement enjoined in the authorized scriptures. Simultaneously, I can also give this Romaharshanasutta life again with a span of long duration, sufficient strength and full power of the senses. Not only that, but if you desire, I shall be glad to award him anything else you may ask. I shall be very glad to grant all these boons to fulfill your desires." This statement by Lord Balaram definitely confirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is free to act in any way. Although his killing of Romaharshanasutta may be considered improper, he could immediately counteract it with greater profit to all. Therefore, one should not imitate the actions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should simply follow the instructions of the Lord. All the great learned sages present realized that although they considered the action of Lord Balaram improper, the Lord was immediately able to compensate with greater profits. Not wanting to detract from the mission of the Lord in killing Romaharshanasutta, all of them prayed, "Our dear Lord, the uncommon use of your kusha weapon to kill Romaharshanasutta may remain as it is. Because you desired to kill him, he should not be brought back to life again. At the same time, your lordship may remember that we sages and Brahmins voluntarily gave him long life. Therefore, such a benediction should not be nullified."
Now what is he supposed to do? So, thus the request of all the learned Brahmins in the assembly was ambiguous, because they wanted to keep intact their benediction that Rama Maharshana Sutta would continue to live until the end of the great sacrifice. But at the same time, they did not want to nullify Balaram's killing him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead therefore solved the problem in a manner befitting his exalted position. He said, "Because the Son is produced from the body of the Father, the Vedas enjoin that the Son is the Father's representative. Therefore I say that Ugrasravasutta, the son of Romaharshana Sutta, should henceforth take his father's position and continue the discourses on the Puranas. And because you wanted Romaharshana to have a long duration of life, this benediction will be transferred to his son. The son, Ugrasrava, will therefore have all the facilities you offered, a long duration of life and a good and healthy body, and with no disturbances and full strength of all the senses." Lord Balaram then implored all the sages and brahmanas that aside from the benediction offered to the son of Romaharshana, they should ask him from him any other benediction, and he would be prepared to fulfill it immediately. The Lord thus placed himself in the position of an ordinary kshatriya and informed the sages that he did not know in what way he could atone for his killing of Romaharshana, but whatever they would suggest, he would be glad to accept. The Brahmanas could understand the purpose of the Lord, and thus they suggested that he atone in a manner beneficial to them. They said, "Our dear Lord, there is a very powerful demon of the name Balvala. He is the son of Ilvala, and he visits this sacred place of sacrifice every fortnight on the full moon and moonless days, and creates a great disturbance to the discharge of our duties in the sacrifice. O descendant of the Dasharhar family, we all request you to kill this demon. We think that if you kindly kill him, that will be your atonement on our behalf. The demon occasionally comes here and profusely throws upon us contaminated impure things like pus, blood, stool, urine, and wine. He pollutes this sacred place by showering such filth upon us. After killing Balvala, you may continue touring all the sacred places of pilgrimage for 12 months. And in that way, you will be completely freed from all contamination. That is our prescription." Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 78th chapter of Krishna, the killing of Dantavakra, Vidurata, and Romaharshana. Okay, so we are fasting until noon, and I suggest that we continue having kirtans and readings and talks through the morning, anybody who's willing to participate in that. Damodar Prabhu, could you read the next chapter? The next chapter is also about killing Balvala and Balaram finishing his tour of the holy places. And we can also read that chapter about that involves the killing of Rukmi. And there's a few stories in the Vrindavan Leela, but I don't have the book here. Okay. I'll leave this here, but I need to get it back later. Maybe we have some kirtan for now, you know, for a little while, then continue with reading.